Hello, welcome to the Tuesday Night Discussion Group. This is for May the 6th, 2014. We'll be discussing chapter 4 of my book and Walt Olesky's book, God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain. We'll be discussing chapter 4 tonight, of each of our chapter 4s, which mine is Imaging, Focusing, NLP Swishing, and Reconsolidation. Walt's chapter 4 is The Girls I Left Behind, and I'm sure that's going to be great. Walt's always got great stories. Before we get into all of that, I need to remind everybody that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. If you have a medical concern, you should see a properly licensed physician, or as we like to say, a TMS physician. Now, with that being said, we have a lot of good stuff to talk about, a lot that I want to try to get cleared up. That I will get cleared up tonight. And with that being said, Bruce,
okay. The first chapter, is Walt here tonight?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, hi, Walt. Yeah, the first chapter, I think we should begin with chapter 4, which is Journaling 2 by Walt. And it's entitled The Girls I Left Behind, or you might subtitle it, Love's Labor's Lost.
Yes.
And
I thought we would take a little break in the book and talk about my sex life, such as it was.
It doesn't sound that bad.
Some of it, I think, I've had repressed emotions about.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to discuss. This chapter is about the power of TMS journaling, just as Walt's previous chapter 3 was. However, now Walt focuses on a lighter subject as he asks, how much lighter could I get than to tell you about the love life, my love life for over 82 years? Walt does admit, without being too explicit, that he once did know my way around the boudoir, but limits himself to the more romantic episodes of his biography. There's that one that we can all relate to, his first love, Nancy, the pretty girl with the brown hair in his second grade class, and then the girl in his journalism class at Michigan State, who he was disappointed to learn was engaged to a soldier in the Korean War. End that right there. End of that. Then Walt goes on to recount a catalog of the beautiful movie actresses who couldn't restrain themselves from kissing me, he says, like Joan Caulfield and Rhonda Fleming. Being that he was the editor of the television editor of the Tribune, this is how he came into contact with these fabulous women. But however, Walt always returns to the theme that he had a career in journalism to think about. And he had his mind set on being a reporter. His ambition was in the way of consummating these relationships and turning them into a marriage. He does mention how Rhonda Fleming kissed him, gave him a big, long kiss in Jock's French restaurant in Chicago. It was very much like the one Burt Lancaster gave to Deborah Kerr in, what's that, On the Beach from Here to Eternity. I think we all remember that
not
one.
Quite. That's not in bathing suits.
That's a touchstone. That's one we all remember. And at the end, he talks about Laura, a girl with the horses from the country club set, and his abortive episode of skinny dipping when the married guy he was with took off with Laura, and he didn't feel quite like he could join in. And I think that
I didn't want my future wife skinny dipping with my best friend.
Yeah,
whose wife was in a tent with mental illness. It wasn't right, so I bowed out.
Yeah, it was something moral there, wasn't it? And maybe that has something to do with repressed emotionality.
I think
connected.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. And according to on a lighter note, Walt talks about laughter yoga and the power of laughing off your problems. And what is it he says?
Believe
in that very strong. Oh, he says the advantages of laughter. These can involve the heart chakra and are good for the heart, diaphragm, intercostal muscles, respiratory and facial muscles, while releasing endorphins to create a sense of well-being. And I think all of us who know Walt know about his addiction to classic American comedy movies, Buster Keaton and Laurel and Hardy, and I imagine Charlie Chaplin, too.
Yeah, Chaplin,
funny how
too.
It's funny
even
how
the Three Stooges.
Even the Three Stooges, they're a little bit toward the pathetic. I think of Laurel and Hardy as up on a high
plane. Yeah, they were gentler. They were sweeter. Yeah,
so,
it'll all make you laugh, and that's the important thing.
What do you think, since we've got him on the barbecue spit here, what do you think, Walt, these abortive relationships say, how do they underlie your TMS symptomology? Just too good a guy, you know, to cross these taboos?
I was brought up to be a good Catholic boy, and we didn't go skinny dipping, especially with your best friend going along with your girlfriend. I didn't care for that idea. And the funny thing is, I was over the years close to being engaged to four different girls, but something told me they just weren't right, or I wasn't ready for it. Some people just aren't ready for marriage. I remember wonderful aunts and uncles in the family, and I think I just kind of thought, well, I'm going to be an uncle or an aunt. And I've been a friend to a lot of couples and helped them save their marriages, and by telling them, you know, hang in there, keep the woman you loved, you still love, and you know, ride over the rough parts. I've been godfather for six or seven children.
And you talk about how you brought the children into the house and had milk and cookies.
Oh yeah, I've been the Pied Piper of the neighborhoods wherever I live. Kids who don't really have a close relationship with their father have come to me, and I've given cookies and milk after school, or we watch a funny comedy on TV. Laurel and Hardy was popular, and they loved them. And we watched animal shows. This one boy got to know all the animals. And years later, I would get Christmas cards or letters from these kids who were growing up, and they would tell me that they just loved coming over to my house and visiting with me and my dog. Today, neighbors would be suspicious of something like that. But in the old days, that was not, you didn't worry about that.
One thing I noticed was in your narrative was your ambition to become a reporter. You said that
was really strong.
Sidetracked you. Yeah, you were very ambitious, and
I was also busy. You know, when you work the night shift at the Chicago Tribune from eight at night to 5-6 in the morning, or 10 o'clock at night to 8 in the morning, you don't get time to do much dating.
Yeah.
So I don't think I really ever was in love enough to propose marriage.
But you felt it that night before the skinny dipping episode, you said.
I was more interested in her than in any of the others.
One thing I noticed, too, was your ambition to rise up with a blue-collar background, and now you were interacting with people like Rhonda Fleming in the Fancy French restaurant, and then this girl, Laura, she was upper middle class, obviously.
She was upper upper.
Yeah, the country club set.
I didn't think I would fit into that. I was like F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda.
Yeah,
and,
that's
you
what
know,
you said.
The Great Gatsby. He didn't feel, he loved her, but he really didn't belong with the girl that he really wanted, you know, Daisy. He didn't belong in Daisy Buchanan's life.
What was that famous discussion between Ernest Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald where F. Scott Fitzgerald said, "You know, Ernest, the rich, they're different than we are." And Hemingway fired back, "Yes, they got more money."
Fitzgerald was a wonderful, wonderful friend to Hemingway, and Hemingway was a son of a bitch to Fitzgerald. He was terrible. He was jealous. Not only that I think Fitzgerald was a better writer, but Fitzgerald had a sensitivity that Hemingway didn't have. Hemingway was the macho guy.
Yeah, he sure was.
And Fitzgerald was the sensitive person. So, Hemingway did not treat him fairly.
Yes, so your blue-collar background gave you a tremendous drive to achieve, and yet once you moved into this, bourgeois grand environment, then you were always kind of the outsider.
Well, with the girl that we were just talking about, the one that went skinny dipping with my best friend, she was a horse woman, you know. She rode and jumped horses for trophies, and all over her parents' house were, you know, cabinets with her trophies. And I thought, you know, if we got married, we'd live in a small apartment somewhere. And where would we keep the horse?
She could pay for it and have it boarded on the outskirts of town.
And I couldn't afford that, so it wasn't the right match.
Yeah, but...
But I think if I had proposed, she would have said yes. She really liked... Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't like me? I was a good-looking, active kid.
that can make up for a lot. What is that? No money, bad in bed.
Yeah.
Bad in bed, no money.
Well, anyway, it wasn't right for me, and I think my ambition also got in the way.
But you were talking before about the effect of the 1930s on your consciousness. And,
also, my parents divorced when I was 7, and she married a mailman a couple of months later because he had a house. And then... my folks got back together again a year later, and then he lived 10 years, and then he passed away, and within a few months, she married his brother. So I had 4 fathers, and that made me kind of leery about marrying.
I didn't think I got married because my parents had such a conflict they channeled through me that any of my relationships played out according to their rules, which was only they could get along with each other. But that's a whole different story.
I've been glad all my life that I didn't marry. I've focused on other things and never really felt that I missed out on anything.
So we're coming up on the 20-minute mark, and if we want to keep this schedule, we're going to have to move on soon. But I thought that perhaps we could talk about the role of journaling. You're talking about, a lot of this chapter is about journaling, and you're very generous in that you share what you learned about yourself from journaling with us. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the role of journaling in recovery?
Yeah.
I know that you feel quite strongly about it.
I've been writing my chapters in the book about journaling, and the information comes out through the journaling, because at the very first, when I read Sarno's book, Healing Back Pain, and read about journaling from other sources, his and other sources, I didn't feel comfortable with that. And I was kind of resisting the idea of journaling. And I noticed some people are having trouble with journaling. They said it depresses them to think about the past. Well, I started journalizing when I found out that it was incredibly helpful, that things came to my mind that I never remembered, never dreamed that I would have been repressing. But I think I did. my parents' divorce made me feel repressed of separation anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
My parents fought a lot. It was almost always about money, not having enough during the 30s Great Depression. But I just felt that that I started to learn a lot about myself and my parents, and was able to forgive them because I simply began to put myself in their shoes. And I think part of journaling that was so helpful to me was doing that, thinking about, well, what was my mother and father, what were they going through at the time that they were arguing with each other? And I started to realize that my dad had a lot of back trouble, back pain, and I think he had TMS from the stresses of being the father of three young kids during the Depression when it was tough to make a living. And he did his best, but he gambled and drank, and that didn't help. So I wrote about it because I thought it would ring a bell with people reading the book. That they would see how deeply I went into my personal life and shared it with people in the book. For them to get the courage to really delve into their childhoods. And that's where Dr. Sarno says most of our repressed emotions, our anger, which turns after years, turns into rage, where it comes from. So I wrote a lot about that, mainly to encourage, or hoping it would encourage people to think about their early years and to hopefully lead them to forgive the people that they think were causing them pain and grief, and that's why I wrote it.
And so the goal of all of this is to release it by hopefully reframing it and finding new perspectives on it.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
I know that you're a very spiritual man, and the book is clearly about spirituality, to one of the main themes. Do you feel like, I almost get the feeling that being able to reflect on these past events might have even helped you from a spiritual perspective? Do you think that's true?
It definitely did, because when I first got the back pain 2 years ago and started to read about TMS healing and got to know Herbie, and Herbie has a strong Christian faith. And then I read Dr. Brady's book. I forgot the title of it, but it's another one about TMS and back pain. And he suggested
Scott Brady
that we include, yeah, that we include asking God to heal us and make peace with. If you're not quite at peace with your faith or with God, do that right away. And I'll tell you, I took him for his word right away, and I'd been having trouble with the Catholic Church's positions, ignoring and encouraging pedophilia and being too political. You know, whatever the Republicans wanted, the Catholic Church, it became like, the Catholic Church became a religious arm of the Republican Party, and I'm a Democrat, and I'm really an independent, but I'm more of a Democrat. So I was having a lot of trouble, even with the Pope, and because of the.
But let's bring it back to your personal experience.
Yeah. So I decided to let God handle the whole thing. And I forgave the church, I forgave the Pope, I forgave everybody. And I figured, let God judge them and let him handle it. And did that give me a lot of relief? It did.
That's great. So time-wise, we should probably move on to Herbie, or to Eric.
I think,
Bruce,
oh, I think so, because there's so much in Herbie's chapter that
yeah,
I think
I
is...
overwhelming.
Yeah. So let's go to Herbie, and thank you all for coming and for listening to my tales.
Thanks so much, Walt.
Okey-doke. I think I'll sign off an hour before bedtime. Bye-bye.
All right, sounds good. Do you want to take it from here, Bruce?
Okay. The second chapter we're covering is Eric's journey. That's chapter 4, and it's entitled Imaging, Focusing, NLP Switching, and Reconsolidation, that is, memory reconsolidation. And according to the mind, according to Eric, the mind will create what we imagine. In other words, imagination precedes action. Even though he read the great teachers of the mind, he didn't know before how to work those laws correctly. But by mixing thought and belief with desire, action, and faith, Eric has, as he says, stumbled across the secret and learned to do just that. In this chapter, chapter 4, Eric describes a host of specific mind-body healing techniques that include imaging, reframing, neuro-linguistic programming with swishing, along with various belief systems. There's even a convenient set of links to how to YouTube videos on swishing, triggers, and phobia relief the reader can use as references. While reading Eric's detailed descriptions, his how-tos, how to perform these advanced mind-body healing techniques. Now, a couple of sessions past, Eric walked me through reframing and the seven steps associated therewith, but I think in this chapter, the core procedure that therapeutic procedure that Herbie treats is neuro-linguistic programming and swishing. It's NLP with swishing, and he goes into detail with it. Swishing is an NLP technique used to help people develop better behavior patterns, such as quitting smoking, changing eating habits, and feeling less anxious about coming events in their lives, such as speaking in public, going to the doctor or dentist, going on a date. The list is endless. The NLP swish pattern is used to replace any negative thought with a more positive one. And these are like ideas, emotions, memories of events that have been lodged in your mind that you can change via the imagination. And Eric asks in the chapter, why is the speed that you make the change so in, I wanted to ask him why the speed that you make the change is so important. But
that's a good one. You want me to go ahead and answer it while you got it?
Where do I get through all these steps, the seven steps of NLP with swishing?
Okay.
Swishing involves submodalities, which are the finer distinctions in our internal pictures, feelings, and sounds that come to us in the form of thoughts. Keep the good ones, get rid of the bad ones. That's his advice. And then he deals with memory reconsolidation. That's the second step of NLP with swishing. In a meditative state, your body will respond to the thoughts and images being created in your mind. But NLP swishing can take the negative charge out of an old emotion or memory so we can rid ourselves of fear, anxiety, pain, and anger. Changing a memory with a swish is called reconsolidation, which can reduce the emotional and physical pain immensely. And he gives a long list of steps toward memory reconsolidation through NLP swishing. There are anchors, and he gives some pretty specific directions here. Keep feeling the same mental state now as you did on the best day of your life. Eric says to close your eyes, think about that day in order to keep feeling right now what it was then, what it was like then. And this is the next phases involve changing these states. And it's what he calls state management. Close your eyes again and think of the best time you've ever had. See yourself in that time and feel how you felt then. Close your eyes and anchor it by squeezing your thumb and holding it for 10 seconds. Repeat this 3 to 4 times. This may take up to 4 times to be in a complete control of your state. Control of the state is, he refers to, as state management. And the next step is anchoring good states, memories, or times in your, of your life. At the most exciting time of the memory, squeeze your thumb in the same place, or the best time of your memory. Same, you use the same pressure and touch with the squeeze. Now you hold it for 5 to 10 seconds, then let go and repeat the process 3 or 4 times. Now every time you squeeze your thumb, you feel, you re-experience the same wonderful state as the original memory. And the next step in this is looping and stacking, layering these emotional states. Doing this, you do this repeatedly, and that's called looping. When the repeat process with, when you repeat this process with other good memories, you are doing something called stacking, which piles one good state on top of another into a loop that combines two positive emotions from the two separate memories. You're taking two states of mind and you're linking them with this pressure. This is very close to like EFT, using acupressure, in order to reinforce a state of consciousness. And you do this in order to condition yourself. When you do, you perform this procedure over and over again for a period of, Eric says, 21 to 60 days, you have conditioned yourself to have those original good feelings. Now all you need to do is think about a feeling or situation you are stressed out about, anchor by squeezing your thumb, and you should instantly experience the feel-good memory that you've looped and stacked, I guess, which will eliminate your negative state of mind. You can do this eventually with mental pictures alone. So
yeah, you could do it with.
Is that a fairly good summary of how this process works?
It was a great summary. You know, according to the way the book was written and the way you read it out of the book. The thing is, you know, people has to read over that and over it to understand what those words mean. What am I trying to say? What am I trying to convey? That's one of the things that me and Forrest was talking about a little bit right before the show here. So, that's your question, too, is let's get this explained so we can understand what's going on, right?
Yeah. I know I wrote it all out in detail. I tried to summarize it and break it down into the steps necessary.
Well, to me, this was like the big secret that I had looked at, I've read about it, I had studied it my whole life, and I could never get it figured out. I could never figure out what these guys were meaning by this swish. What were they? Why were they wanting me to imagine things, and why were they wanting me to create these different feelings and emotions so that I could stack them on top of each other and then anchor to it, okay? And I'll explain all that in just a minute. But after I read Sarno's book, see, because I'd already had all that down, studied, but the part with the swish that I said this was the big secret here, until I read Sarno's book, and then I started understanding that the mind does heal the body. You know, you do the procedures, it really does work. I went right back to my NLP studies while I was healing. And when I went back to my NLP studies while I was healing, it all clicked with my NLP studies too, that this swish is to take the negative charge out of bad situations that's happened in your life, whether it goes all the way back to childhood or all the way to now. And you can use it for lots of different situations. Now,
you might say then that you're reprogramming yourself.
Well, what you're doing is you're taking anger, hate, fear out of the memory, out of the, say you think of something, somebody mentions something to you and you can remember it and you have this terrible feeling of it. And you can take that terrible feeling, that negative charge out by that swish, the first seven steps you said first.
Yeah.
So you're changing the emotional charge, kind of like Walt when he went back and he did his journaling about all these experiences in his past. He was removing the emotional charge, and that's what the swish and the NLP and the reframing does too.
Yes, that's why I called it. Generally, it's called reframing because it can go over to focusing, like Eugene Gillen's focusing, to where, you know, he gets you to focus on the emotions that come with the pain instead of us running from them. We focus on them, and then after a while, the emotions start not to be so bad. So then that's sort of like a reframe when you do journaling.
It sounds an awful lot like Dr. Schubiner's ISTDP, too, where you extract an old memory during journaling of a real unpleasant experience, and you focus on that, and then you forgive the person. You move through hate to guilt to finally forgiveness. It's a lot like classical Buddhist meditation, too, part. It seems like you're doing that same sort of thing that you're talking about here with this swishing.
This is a quicker way. I remember when I was doing the EFT model, the faster EFT model, one of the scenarios that you do in the faster EFT is you'll start off by saying, you know, I hate this situation. And then by the time you're done, you're tapping or whatever, and you're saying, well, you know, I can handle it. Basically, you've gotten to a point where you have reframed it. So I see what you mean by the reframing part, but the swish, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of faster EFT, but the guy that invented faster EFT, he took NLP, you know, the neuro-linguistic programming, he added it to EFT, and then he started swishing these pictures in people's minds. And then they started, you know, losing headaches and losing pains in their shoulders and stuff. And it was pretty phenomenal for him. So when I saw that, I thought, you know, this ain't real, you know. And then all of a sudden, I knew NLP. I knew I'd done pick back up on the swish. So I thought to myself, every time I get upset or ill, then I have a flare-up. Or something. Something impaired is running all over my body at this time. So I thought, why don't I use this and see how it works for me? So I had my own style, my own way of doing it, and I got it laid out there in those seven steps again. I called it the Wonder Win, and it's what me and you've done a few weeks ago. It's what me and you did a few weeks ago. And each time I would have something bad or a bad scenario or a bad thought come up through journaling or whatever it might be, then I would just swish it.
Yeah, I never heard that term before, Wonder Wind. I wondered if that was your own invention.
That was my own invention. Yeah, that's the beauty of NLP. Once you learn the ropes, then you can go out and invent your own magic, you know? I don't even like calling it magic, but basically when it's said and done, it's like magic. It's pretty cool stuff. It's stuff that...
It sounds an awful lot like ritual magic, actually, with... where you imagine concentric circles around you and a pentagram while you perform invocations, and you get yourself into that emotional state. You embody it in your body.
So you remember, like I said, I was preaching for a long time, and, you know, one of the things you learn when you're a preacher is to always tell people that this can be beat. You'll talk to them. You'll talk them through things. You'll tell them to imagine stuff. You'll lay hands on them. And now that's and next thing you know, 99% of the time with the people I was working with, I always had success. These people would always come back with great stories to tell me that everything turned out all right. Now, in leading up in these years, that was a higher power. That wasn't me using NLP. That was laying on the hands that it talks about in the Bible, and then the higher power does, the Lord does his work, okay? But when I went in and I learned the NLP part, where you can actually take the negative charge out of a bad situation, then I knew that there was a power that we have, that we can change people's lives almost in an instant, from phobias.
Then can you do this, Herbie, can you do this empathetically to another person? Can you go through the NLP with switching and take on somebody else's bad imagery, bad memories, bad emotions?
That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. I don't have to know the content. I don't have to really know none of the content. I keep it all general, basically. I keep it all in context. And I don't have to pull in all of the emotions, you know, like, I don't know what that word is, but when you're dealing backwards and forwards with somebody you want to help, and they start telling you the story, and then you get empathetic towards them, so you start feeling the same emotions. No, you don't have to go through none of that. You know, like in the preaching, I had to go through every bit of it, and I felt all the emotions. I was there, and I was very empathetic with it. But with the swish, all I got to do is ask you, can you see it? Can you see the picture? Whoever made you mad, whatever the situation, the bad situation might be, and then you can just swish it with the. And the reason it's called swish is because, like, when you in the part, like when you throw the rock, you'll make a sound like poof or boom or something like that. The word swish came up because of the question that you asked one ago. Why we got to do this so quick? You know, why has it got to be fast?
Yeah, that was the question I had.
Why? Because you
have to do it quickly before the mind catches up with it.
Well, no. It's when this first got started, the swish, when it first got started 40 years ago, it was taking them an hour to do it. And the guy that actually invented it and figured it out, or took claim to that, because I think it's been going on for thousands of years. I don't believe a man just invented it 40 years ago. But anyway, he figured out how to do it in like 10 minutes. And then he got to where he could do it in 3 or 4 minutes. And the reason he done it the way he done it, it's like this. So you're watching a movie, right? And like when you're watching a movie on TV, and when we watch that, we don't watch it frame by frame. If they was to slow it down and just show us each frame by frame, then we would be like, what is this about? I don't understand this. This is not fast enough for the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind picks up super fast. I mean, it does. It picks up super fast. It can latch onto things real quick. It's been proven. And the whole idea is like a movie. It's like a movie. If you're watching a movie and it's a good movie or whatever, you get into it, you watch that movie as all the frames are going by real fast. And so that's how the subconscious picks it up. You pick it up. It's real fast. And that's how he came to the idea that if we do this quicker, then it'll work faster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's because, what is it that Dr. Sarno says that Well, he says that the heart is slower, doesn't he, than the conscious mind?
The
subconscious mind is something about, you know, how we have to recondition. And I'm not
there's, a, there's a poem
away
I think
from,
you're referring to that's Bruce. I wish that I pray that the heart could grasp what the conscious mind grasps so quickly. So the subconscious mind, which is represented by the heart, takes a long time to grasp things, which the conscious mind gets immediately.
Edna St. Vincent Millay. I remember.
Perfect. Edna St. Vincent. Well, this is a great opportunity to take a moment and to say, is there anyone who's any of our callers right now? Do you have any questions? Is there anything that isn't clear about what you're hearing that you'd like Eric to clarify a little bit more and explain?
So I'd like to see if somebody would like to call in and have Eric work with them on this NLP with swishing. Do
that
a demo.
Great idea. That's a great idea. By the way, you don't have to give out any personal information.
That's right.
Just guide you through it. And so for anyone who's listening, if we do this, you can go along with it.
Yeah, I know I was his guinea pig before, but it sounds like a calling guinea pig would work really well.
Well, it was pretty good, and it worked pretty good for you, right?
Yeah, I saw how it worked. And I can see from doing that how many images you carry around with you from times that you've been put down. Mm-hmm. That build a pattern through your whole life. Take the negative valence off of those memories, however you do it, then it's not in charge of you anymore.
It takes a big load off your back, yeah. And I literally did like thousands of them like that. And it really, really was the pinnacle in my mind and everything, how I got better quicker, how it all came about a lot sooner, I think. Because I was, every time I would get this negative thought, this negative hurt or something like when I was journaling, and then all of a sudden that emotion would come back on me of this time that I had basically repressed years ago. I would just go ahead and switch.
It was a lot of work, though, wasn't it? This was a lot of work, a lot of work.
Yeah, well, as it came to me is when I would do it, because first I had a journal, about all the past and current pressures. And then I had a happy journal, and the past and current pressures, each time I would write it down about them, when I would get done, I would go, after I faced them, felt it, and all of that, I would go ahead then and swish them and get it to where they didn't bother me anymore. So in effect, I was releasing it through a swish.
Now, I think I read in here in this chapter that you trace this back to the work of Franz Alexander. Was he the first guy to come up with swishing? Psychiatrist in the 50s?
I believe him and Fritz Perls was the guys, right? That a famous psychologist named Fritz Perls was.
You mean Milton Erickson?
Well, Milton Erickson was in there too. They modeled Milton Erickson and came up with a lot of this, but Fritz Perls was in there too. He was a psychologist, and this Franz Alexander was in there on knowing how to do some of this swish work. There's lots of different styles out there, but
and Milton, Franz Alexander Milton, was the first guy to try and connect different kinds of psychological problems with different ailments in the body, if I seem to recall, where a specific problem in your mind would manifest as a specific symptomology.
I'd say Alexander.
And I believe Sarno doesn't go along with that. So Sarno disagrees with that. But okay. I think Alexander did do that. Yeah.
Alexander hit at it, and Milton Erickson, the famous hypnotherapist from the 30s and 40s, he was the one that capitalized on being able to change people's, bad thought patterns. I mean, these people would come in. There was one lady, I'll just go ahead and give you an example. There was a man, he wasn't a lady, he was a man. He walked around, and everywhere he went, Laura Ingalls from Little House on the Prairie, I think I've told y'all this story before, but she would jump out of the TV, and she would follow him around. And as she would follow him around, it would just drive him batty, And his parents was real worried about him, and they kept him, in the house all the time. I think he was getting close to 30 years old, and he was just schizophrenic. He was scared all the time. He didn't understand why this was happening to him. And the guy that was the therapist at the time that came to help this person so he could get out of this situation, his name was Richard Bandler. And when he came over to see him, he asked him, he said, when she follows you, what is she saying? And so he started talking to him about it. And he said, have you ever thought for a minute about the cartoon, Daffy Duck, where the guy takes the eraser and he erases Daffy Duck's mouth as he's talking? And the guy looks at him, the guy that was having a problem, he looked over at Richard Bandler and he says, no, I've never thought of it like that. He said, well, he acted like he had a big eraser with a big old pencil, and he gave it to him, and he said, well, go ahead and erase that now. Go ahead and erase her mouth so you can't hear her talking to you no more. And he done it, and she couldn't hear her talking to him no more. And it just totally reframed this guy's thought on, you know, what he had going on here. And he basically, when it was all said and done, he had done erased the whole picture of this Laura Ingalls jumping out of the TV, running around and arguing with him all the time. And he gave him a new life by showing him how to control something that was way out of control. So it was just a reframe.
Very, very interesting. Quite intriguing. I did promise Paula before we started, she's a new caller and found this book through the TMS Wiki. I said that we could spend some time on her. We've gone over a little bit already, so we should probably switch over. But Bruce, did you have any final things you wanted to bring up with Eric?
Didn't you describe somewhere in there where someone took a image of someone who had always frightened them or was a symbol of anger or so on, and then reduced them to a cartoon character where they became trivial, where they just, you were no longer frightened by that image, where it was just like a little insignificant Donald Duck character?
It's sort of funny, and I think that's in the later chapters, but somebody's sitting there and you see them in your mind, like your boss or somebody, and they keep arguing with you or whatever, or it might be his son or whoever just keeps getting on your nerves. You could actually, from what you see in your mind, you can actually change the image of them into like a Daffy Duck image. I mean, could you imagine seeing, one of us has got a wife and she's getting mad at us all the time and it's getting on her nerves. Well, could you imagine putting like Donald Duck's bill on her face and then looking at that and then putting, Daffy Duck's tail on her rear end and then looking at that and then hearing her speak in that language as she's getting on to you. And then all of a sudden it makes it funny and you'll actually laugh. If you do it enough, you'll start to laugh at the picture. And when you start to laugh at it, now they've got a laughing refrain. So that's pretty much what that brings up, is a laughing
reframe.
That's
a reframe, then. That's a reframe. I think kids in school do that quite a bit with their teachers.
Hopefully they do. And that's one of the things.
A classroom full of them.
As we get older, we take what worked for us real good when we were kids, and we forget all of those great things we learned as children.
Well, let's go on, then. Let's see.
Excellent. Excellent. And, it sounds like you guys have a real rhythm going here. So maybe after we finish up with Paula, we can just keep the show going a little bit longer. We do have – so there is a feedback form. We have a feedback form. I'm trying to send the link for this a number of different places. It's at go.tmswiki.org/podcastfeedback. And people have said they want us to keep it an hour, so we're trying to do that. But if anybody has any feedback at any time, send it on down. We would love to get it. But in the meantime, Paula, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Is this Forrest?
This is indeed Forrest, yes.
I thought I recognized your voice. I saw you online telling your story.
I see, yeah, yeah. Hey, well, I hope you enjoyed the video. But so you were talking about you got this book, God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain, and it sounds like you're enjoying it?
Well, no, I haven't gotten the book. I just learned about it through the TMS Wiki yesterday, and then decided I wanted to participate in this discussion. But I haven't had time to get the book yet. I'll have to order it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, yeah. And you said that you were having some issues with your shoulder and that you think that you might be TMS. You might have TMS.
Yes, and I had a problem. I wouldn't have believed that my shoulder was TMS if I hadn't had an experience 5 years ago, which I know now was TMS.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if I could describe that. It's much shorter than my shoulder story because I got to a doctor that recognized it pretty early on, and this time I didn't. But I've been going through this issue with my shoulder for over a year, and then just realized a few weeks ago that definitely I think it is TMS. Mm-hmm. And the same sort of thing that happened to me 5 years ago, that was a problem with my leg. I was thinking today, I had back pain like 10 years ago that then went away. Of course, that's the classic problem Sarno talks about.
Yeah.
But,
so do you, anyway. so you've got pain in your shoulder right now, right?
Yes, it kind of comes and goes. I was just lying here thinking, you know, my shoulder is bothering me more than it does other times. Now, funnily enough, at night, I don't have any pain. I think he talks about the conditioning.
Yeah.
Ironically, for many months, I had night pain. And then it changed.
Okay.
I didn't realize what was going on. Like I said, until maybe a few weeks ago. It started out, excuse me?
Okay, so what have you been doing to help your shoulder?
Well, since I realized it was TMS, I've been doing what Sarno says and basically nothing other than trying to get back to normal activities.
Well, if you're doing what Sarno says, you're doing a lot. You're doing good, so go ahead.
Of course, I haven't moved my body for about a year, literally.
Okay, I went through the same thing.
I stopped moving my shoulders back in August, and I didn't really move them. I mean, I just literally would just keep still. I thought I would injure myself.
I know that feeling. I was just like that. I was so worried about injuring my hands and my thumb and my knee.
I think how I got onto your wiki, the TMS wiki, was several months ago. See, I kept trying to figure out what was wrong with me. In the meantime, I was seeing many doctors. I may have seen 10 or more doctors about this since it started.
Wow.
But most of them orthopedists, some of them neurologists or neurosurgeons. Because I also got some nerve involvement, which I didn't know that could be TMS. But now I know it can be. They never figured out what it was. I was told different things. I told Walt today there's so many details it would take me an hour to tell the whole story.
Hmm.
But,
me too.
Okay. But I remember that's how I got onto the TMS wiki was I had convinced myself 2 or 3 months ago that it was a repetitive stress injury because it started, and that's what you were talking about. That's what you had, right, Forrest, or thought you had.
Yep, yep.
For a number of years and suffered from it. How mine started was I'm older. I'm 54 now. Mm-hmm. But I was getting a master's in library and information science, kind of late in life. But I got a new laptop a couple of years ago. And that's when the pain started, not long after getting that laptop. And I was on the computer every day for hours for like the whole semester. It started, though, I never noticed pain when I was at the computer. But then a couple of times when I would make a sudden movement with my arm, I had this stabbing pain in my right upper arm, and then it would go away. That's how it started.
Gotcha,
and
yeah.
Then one girl in my class, of course most of the students were half my age, but then that was in the fall semester. Over Christmas, I didn't really notice anything. Then in the spring semester, I started getting some weird, like one time I did a little vacuuming and then my hand shook afterwards. And then I guess I started getting night pain, but one of the girls in my class said she thought it was repetitive strain injury. That's the first I ever heard of that. Then I went to the doctor, a physiatrist, and he diagnosed it as rotator cuff tendinopathy. Which, of course, Dr. Sarno says that those things are often TMS. When I told Walt today about it, he started laughing. Rotator cuff tendinopathy. I don't even know what that means exactly. But anyway, that's how it started, and it mushroomed from there. I only got worse. I did physical therapy. I don't know how many details you want. So it's changed. It morphed from a relatively minor problem when it first started, to then it became kind of a monster later, and then my left arm became involved.
That does sound a lot like my story. Now, in terms of what we want to hear, we aren't doctors, so we can't really talk about the medical stuff.
Right. Okay, good. I'm glad you're not doctors.
There you go.
I have no use for doctors.
We can only share. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you have a chance at all, we have a list of doctors and therapists on our website. I totally encourage you to go and see if you can find a TMS doctor in your area, because, you know, that is incredibly valuable.
Actually, I have an appointment with Dr. Zafiridis next Monday.
So happy to hear that. Okay, that is what you need.
That's excellent.
Is wonderful. Peter Zafiridis is an awesome, just an amazing doctor. I have the greatest respect for him. So I'm really happy to hear that.
We're all sitting back here, and I hope you gain some confidence in the fact that each one of us, I can tell by looking at their faces on my monitor, find everything you're describing very familiar.
Well,
this is not extraordinary, the situation you're describing, because you're looking at the forest instead of the trees instead of the forest, so to speak.
Well, and that's what we all did. Yeah.
Yeah, we all do, and that's how we get into trouble with this. It's at the meta level. It's at the big level where you see the larger pattern and connect the dots.
Right.
Everything you've experienced is familiar to each one of us.
This is not exceptional. When my left arm, I thought that I'd injured it doing this physical therapy exercise, but it didn't start hurting for 3 days later after the right arm started hurting. And I didn't figure that out, you know, until recently, how that just didn't make any sense, why it would wait 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything make you ill or upset other than the pain in the other arm, leading up to the pain switching to the other arm?
What caused it to get worse?
Was there anything emotional that you might have went through that could have upset you emotionally instead of structurally? Something that upset you emotionally before the pain went to the other arm?
Well, I thought I'd been in that particular incident, the physical therapist had me do a mobilization exercise, which I was afraid to do.
Yes,
and I had seen the same physical therapist 5 years ago when I had this leg problem.
Mm-hmm.
And became convinced that the physical therapy was hurting me. I don't know whether I ought to tell you that story. That's
What happened to the leg? What happened to your leg? It got better, right?
It all went away. What happened was I was in a restaurant and I kind of fell back, just got out of my chair too fast and fell back on a bench. And I was shook up, but I felt okay in a few minutes. That night I woke up with my right thigh hurting. And I guess it hurt for a few days, so I went to an orthopedist here. He told me I had a thigh strain, so he recommended physical therapy. The physical therapist then told me that I had a back injury. I did exercises, and I started having pain. I went back to the doctor. He recommended another physical therapist, the one I unfortunately saw again this time. She also diagnosed a back or pelvic injury. She did I did exercises. The more exercises I did, the pain spread from my right leg to my left leg, which I didn't understand. I thought that I had some kind of spinal injury or something.
But that's over with now, right? The leg thing?
Well, what finally resolved it, then I started having back pain.
Okay.
Finally, after 3 months, I went to a physiatrist, the guy that misled me this time. He said that I had never had a thigh strain. He said the pain wouldn't come and go because it had kind of come and gone at times. He told me there was nothing wrong with me and other than juiced muscles, and that it would, to stop physical therapy and I'd be fine. Now, he didn't tell me anything about Sarno or psychology or anything like that, but I believed him. I did, and in a couple weeks it was all gone.
I believed.
I'd also had an MRI that showed there was nothing wrong, but I was lucky that he figured out that there was nothing wrong with me. The symptoms didn't make sense.
Well, you two agreed, and then you got better. When you agreed with him, you got better, right?
Yeah, I've totally believed him, and I walked out of his. Yeah.
So now it's the shoulders, right?
Yeah, the trouble is this time I went to him with his shoulder pain, and he didn't recognize that it was TMS. I think it was.
But so you had a TMS doctor? Or something like a mind-body doctor, or he believes in TMS. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know. I just know what he told me the first time.
Okay.
But he didn't ever tell me it was psychological. I figured it was, and later I figured out that it probably had to do with the problem my husband and I were having.
No, yeah. So you understand the protocol.
Yes, then when I finally read the Sarno books, I guess wasn't sure that that's what I had this time until just a few weeks ago. But anyway, I knew for sure that's what happened 5 years ago.
Okay.
But when
you started having the shoulder problems, was it a little bit before that when you had the problems with your husband?
Well, this time it was different. The problems with my husband were 5 years ago.
Okay.
But
well, let's stay right now on the shoulders. Let's focus on the shoulders. Was there any issues? Was there any major life issues that were bad? That was
when the pain.
Go ahead.
When the pain started, I told you I'd been a library and information science graduate student.
Yes.
And at an older age, and I was working at this. Well, it was a new computer. I'd never had a laptop before, so that was a change. I worked every day for 4 months straight, you know, like maybe up to 8 hours a day sometimes. I was so overwhelmed with my work because I was trying to take information science classes. That's even beyond library science, you know.
So the schooling.
In my generation, I had a lot of catching up to do with people that were half my age.
To use Dr. Sarno's language, it sounds enraging.
I think now I probably was. Yes, I've thought about that. This is how bad it was. Even before this semester when the pain started, I was working so hard that I passed up going to a Paul Simon concert. My husband and I were talking about that, so I could put in a few extra hours more on my paper that I was writing. I am the Sarno type to a T, the perfectionist.
You're journaling and filling the
emotion? No, I haven't started journaling. I've been thinking about it more lately.
Yeah.
I think when it started, though, I was having doubts about getting a degree in library and information science when I couldn't really catch up with the others. I probably wasn't going to get a job with it anyway in a nutshell because the library jobs are just, it was probably not even a wise decision to get that degree. I was always hearing about the lack of jobs. And
well, how did everything turn out? How did everything turn out with that?
Well, I've had to drop out of it this past year. If this hadn't happened to me, I'd be graduating now.
Okay, when you think about that, how do you feel?
Well, I don't feel very good.
Well, that's the emotion you need to. That's the emotion that you have to come to peace with, right there. That's
one
of them.
What happened was that if I had simply known what the problem was a year ago, I kept going from. I'd get worse with each doctor I would see, and then therapy that I would do, I'd get more and more pain. So, and then sometimes those doctors wouldn't see me again. The first four doctors are how I got into this. I can't go into all the details, but the second doctor I saw then told me it was a frozen shoulder and the first doctor had been wrong.
You were reinforcing a false diagnosis from various authority figures that you believed in or even false beliefs in. So it just was a ring around the rosy. It just kept building that way.
Well, and his physical therapist told me that the first physical therapist had injured me, that I'd been injured by stuff that she'd had me do when I hadn't felt that way. Mm-hmm. And then, so I was getting these messages of fear, not only misinformation, but fear.
Yep.
And then he told me to stop doing stuff. He told me to stop lifting a glass down from the cabinet, for example. And so I hadn't noticed any problem with that.
But have you processed, have you been able to process this emotion to where you didn't get to finish school?
No, this is one reason why I want to go to Dr. Zafiridis. This is just the start of the tale.
Okay.
Then it got worse from it got worse from there.
Okay. Well, and you got a good doctor.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that then I went to another. The first two doctors had disagreed, and both of their therapies had caused more pain, although I think the pain was TMS. So I went and talked with another physical therapist, and he suggested going to a third doctor to try to see what that doctor said, which of these two things I'd been told was right.
This sounds like a long and long, complicated story.
Okay,
I remember when I was back doing this, I walked into when I got my fibromyalgia diagnosis, I walked into the office with a binder of medical records that was probably 2.5 inches thick. And it sounds like you've got your binder of medical records and you want to share them with us. And I don't know if we can help that much. But it does feel like you're on the right track.
Yes, she is. And my question is, do you want to ask, since I did recover from the shoulder injury, 20 years of it, do you have any questions for me?
Yes, I'll skip over all that medical stuff the last couple weeks I've been doing what Sarno says in just trying to get back to regular daily activities, using my shoulder, not telling myself there's nothing wrong structurally. You know what he says, the 12 daily reminders.
Great stuff.
And it's working. I can do 10 times more than I thought I could. It still doesn't and another thing that has happened during this time, sometimes from one day to the next, I could raise my arm higher by several inches.
Well, it sounds like you're having some good progress.
Doesn't that sound pretty much I mean, I don't know. So
sounds
now
wonderful.
I can, when I first read Sarno's book, which was a couple of months ago, and I didn't realize it, I had not thought I could raise my arm but a foot out from my body. I came home and I raised it shoulder height. And then the next day some of the pains were gone that I'd had. Unfortunately, I went to an orthopedist after that who told me I had frozen shoulders.
Yeah.
And I believe but anyway, to just skip, I'm just saying that my shoulder has gained in range of motion tremendously in the past few weeks, although it's still not normal yet. But
even though you see yourself all in Dr. Sarno's books and you're having, you know, some good results, it takes a minute to recondition your thoughts to what you've learned your whole life about, you know, pain being structural. So so you'll have to give it some time so that you can get your mind away from that. And then every time you hurt, you'll say, what is it bothering me emotionally? You know, what is it that's bothering me emotionally? Instead of focusing on that area where it's hurting, you'll be thinking in your mind, well, what is it that's bothering me emotionally? And you'll try to process that. And then you'll learn steps on how to process your emotions better. And then you'll start to see real good results.
Okay. Although what's bothering me emotionally, ever since I was fine before this started, at least on the surface, I'm sure I was repressing a lot, like you all were saying.
Yeah, this is when the body's crying out and saying, look, enough's enough. We need to get processing these emotions. Yeah.
Right. I now see why my body was crying out, what I was doing to myself with the pressure I was putting on myself.
Yeah, you laid it on out.
But at the same time, my life's been destroyed since this happened. Until just recently, I thought I was going to be in chronic pain and be disabled for the rest of my life.
Well,
until
you're not. Ain't that beautiful?
Right. You know, this is only so my life in terms of I don't have much of a life now because it's all been and I kept seeing doctors up until not even fairly recently who kept reinforcing these negative messages. At one point I was told a pinched nerve was my problem in my neck.
Yeah, you keep going back to the structural. So what you need to do is my first thought to you would start reaffirming, start saying good affirmations to yourself, because I just heard you said a general sentence a while ago that was basically like, my life was destroyed. I think that's what you said.
Yes, that's how it felt.
Yeah, you need to replace that with after you face those emotions that's bothering you, like when you said my life was destroyed, you probably need to journal about that. And then face that emotion. And then as you face that emotion, that's the whole process of journaling about it so you can face the emotion. And as you face the emotion and you start to feel it weaken and all of that, then start reaffirming to yourself that, you know, my body's strong and, you know, I'm calm, I'm relaxed, I'm patient. Sort of affirmations like that. You know, if you ever hear yourself, if you ever catch yourself, you know, beating yourself up with your words, you got the power to change those words, in the thoughts. Like you might hear thoughts saying, you know, you should have done that. Well, just tell it, ask it why not? Why shouldn't I have done it? You know, kind of play with your mind a little if you want. But I'm just saying, we have control over these words that we can say. And a lot of times, like me, my whole life, you know, I thought that I could beat myself up mentally and that I would still be a strong person to be able to go out and do whatever I wanted to do in life. And one of the main things I learned when I started healing was to quit listening to that voice that was beating me up all the time, okay?
Well, I know I was like that before, very hard on myself, but why I then became, if you're saying that I'm beating myself up about having listened to all these stupid doctors.
We all do. We all do. We've all done been through it. I'm just basically speaking about myself when I'm saying this, but I think you're saying it too.
No, I think you're right, Herbie, that I am beating myself up about that.
Yeah.
And I think you're telling me exactly the right thing to do. Because I have blamed myself very much for getting myself into this. And I went to good doctors at good places. One place I went was Mayo Clinic. I went to the Cleveland Clinic. I went to the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City. Yeah. I mean, I thought that by going to these top places, I'd be getting good help. And these people are as ignorant as, I mean, I've got better help down the street here. You know, I thought that... You see what I'm saying? I think you're seeing that I'm beating myself up about the mistakes that I made in listening to these people.
Well, you're holding a lot of anger, and you have to process that anger. You have to process those emotions, okay?
You can see why Dr. Sarno says that the result of going to the traditional medical establishment leaves the patient with the notion that they're broken or structurally damaged. They're into a cul-de-sac. That's what happens when you go to the traditional medicos with this set of symptoms that move around.
Is there a doctor?
When it's TMS, obviously. If you have if you have cancer and you go there, or, you know, bubonic plague, you...
You're in luck.
It's exactly the right thing.
Yeah, but you're right. I am very critical of myself for doing all of that, listening to these people, and the stupid therapists as well, the physical therapists. Physical therapy is what hurt me the first time.
Well, they're only doing what they've been taught and what they've been trained to do. You know, it's not like they mean to do anything wrong to you. They think they're helping you, you know?
Yeah, so, although these doctors that I saw are the most heartless bunch of people. Anyway, they were heartless. Well, I don't know if it's Sarno, but I've been reading a book by Norman Cousins, you know, who wrote Anatomy of an Illness.
Oh, he's very good.
He wrote a book called Head First and The Biology of Hope, and was talking about that, how the doctor-patient relationship can be very healing. It's normal. But the ones that I went to, it's normal for a patient to want to know. I just wanted a doctor partly to understand and listen to me.
Okay. It sounds to me like all the Sarno work that you're doing, sounds to me like that's working. Like that's what it is. I would get the journaling, though.
Okay. I will.
Yeah, I would get the journaling and say those good affirmations. Make sure you do that.
Okay. So what I've been trying to tell myself, there's nothing structurally wrong. My shoulder's fine. I'm going to get my range of motion back, you know, which I think I will.
Visualize your shoulders being healed. Visualize seeing yourself with your shoulders healed and all of that. I mean, That's what I would add to it, is to visualize seeing your shoulders strong and healed and seeing yourself do what you want to do. Visualize it every day for maybe like 5 minutes. It's going to be hard at first to do it, but if you can pretend like you can see something, then you'll see it.
Well, how long did it take? Did it take you 3 months, Herbie, to get your range of motion back? Did you lose range of motion? You said you had a frozen...
Okay, I had a frozen shoulder for like almost 20 years, and it was it would get better, you know, like after the year or two, and then I would go and raise my arm or something like I was saying earlier, and then it would supposedly be a rotator cuff or a frozen shoulder again. But as soon as I learned about the repressions, as soon as I learned about this inner anger that I always thought was okay as long as I was a good old guy on the outside, as soon as I learned that I've been doing all of this to myself and I had this inner rage, then what I did was, it was like an instant, okay, I understand this. And then when I done that, I looked right over at my shoulder and I told it to stop hurting. Okay? That's what I did. I looked right over my shoulder. I told it to stop hurting. I raised my arm up, set it down, everything. Okay? It took me probably a month for my shoulder to get better after that.
But of course, everyone is different, and it's important. Everyone, this is a lesson that I think I saw Bruce was smiling a little bit, because we get this question all the time. Everybody wants to know how long it's going to take, very, very, very important not to watch the calendar. It's going to take as long as it takes.
Well, and what got
you
me
can talk
is
to Dr. Zafiridis about that, but that's what we find.
What got to me, every day for a week, I would tell myself it would get better the next day, and I would. I could raise it higher and higher. And then one day it stopped, last week.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I talked with a psychologist that day. She told me, at first she had told me she thought it was the mind-body, you know, that it was psychosomatic.
Mm-hmm.
But then that day she implied that it wasn't. I'm not going to see her anymore. I was talking to her by phone. She doesn't live here in Bloomington or where I live. She lives somewhere else. I'd seen her 20 years ago and had gotten back in touch with her trying to get some help.
Mm-hmm.
But she suggested that it wasn't psychosomatic, and I really haven't had much success since that day, a week ago.
That's okay. I mean, I think that's the way that the TMS mind works. It's interesting listening to you. There's a therapist named Alan Gordon who we've talked to a bunch, and he uses a term called galloping. It's a way of talking, the way you kind of rush through sentences. And I have a tendency to gallop. Sometimes I'm in a rush to get to the end of the sentence. Like, I just got to get it all out. And I get this kind of the same thing from you, that you just rush to get all this. You got to tell this story. You got to, you know, tell us what happened with this person and this person and this person and this person. And I think that same energy, when it comes to trying to figure out what's going on, it's that energy is going to make you want to say, well, is this TMS or is it not TMS? Or is this TMS or is it not TMS? And what you got to do is you just got to go to Dr. Zafiridis and you got to say, you know, he said it was TMS, assuming he does, of course. This is all on the assumption that he does. But he said it was TMS. I got to trust him, and it's going to take some time. I've already gotten so many inches of range of motion back. I'm going to get more. There's going to be ups and downs along the way. That's totally okay. And I don't need to worry about it. I don't need to analyze it. I don't need to dice it up and slice it and cut it up a million different ways, because that is my mind working against me.
Mm-hmm.
That's my takeaways.
Well, let me say this.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be so hard for you to do this, is my bet. But
you're right.
You got to do it.
Well, before this happened, I was a relatively calm person, at least on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And this has just changed me. I've had this total focus. I think other people say this on the TMS website. My total focus for the past year has been my pain and my shoulders.
There's your TMS.
Boy,
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah.
Boy,
when you focus on it, when you just got your mind on it, like a, you know, like a laser beam on where the pain's at, you're feeding that pain. So get your mind on another part of your body. Do something else with that focus, okay?
Let me tell you this. My left arm is now fine. it got okay in about 2 days after, I believe, the TMS, you know, the Sarno.
Yeah. Start focusing on your big toe or something. Start instead of your shoulder, focus on your big toe or something.
About that obsessive state of mind that Forrest referred to. When I had my relapse in 2008, I would go out trying to get rid of it. I would get on my bicycle and I would do 30 miles every afternoon, uphill sometimes, in the rain, things I would never do today. And that was simply that quality of mind that was my enemy. I was fighting with it. And I thought that by fighting that way, I was going to get rid of it. But all it does is feed it.
I thought
energy today to go out riding in the rain 30 miles.
I thought going out lifting weights, working against the pain was going to be the answer, but set me down real fast, and it just made it hurt worse. So I just started understanding that it was the emotions.
An absolutely obsessive state of mind going when you have stuff. It's like a burr under your saddle, isn't it? You do those kind of fanatical kind of things.
You got people you're mad at that after you journal, you know, if you could learn this reframing technique, then it would be good so that you could lose a lot of anger towards the people that, you know, got you upset if you can't just release it through the journaling, you know. That's the only time I would use the reframing that I use, the swish, is if I couldn't get rid of it through the journaling. Because the journaling itself is a releasing of the emotions that you haven't faced.
But I'd like to bring up one thing that Forrest said a minute ago that worries me. You said it's Dr. Zafiridis thinks it's TMS. That's what I'm afraid of, is that if he says it's not TMS, I think it is TMS. I know I had it 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, and I do think looking back on this, there are different things that don't make sense now that I don't think it made sense to the doctors and they didn't tell me that. But I can now see that the symptoms were, I haven't even told you all the symptoms. It's not just my shoulder. I had neurological, even in my legs and feet, I had tingling, stabbing pains. Those all went away.
From what you're saying, I bet that when you go to see Dr. Zafiridis, he's going to tell you it's TMS. But if you go to him and he says, actually, you've got an infection in your shoulder cap, well, that wouldn't make sense. You've got a cancer in your shoulder capsule, then you should go see a cancer doc.
I had an MRI done on my shoulder finally. And it showed nothing like that. It showed a small rotator cuff tear, rotator cuff tendinopathy, osteoarthritis. I think all things that Sarno thinks are normal aging changes.
Let Dr. Zetot tell you about it. I'm pretty sure that when he shows, he's going to say it's TMS.
I went to an orthopedist after that, and he said it wasn't my rotator cuff; it was frozen shoulder. But the MRI said there was no sign of adhesive capsulitis. See, that's another weird thing.
Weird stuff.
Yeah, you're just trying to make sense of this stuff that isn't sensible.
That doesn't make sense.
It is nonsensical. It's just that's what I mean. The mind seizes on it and then just tries to unravel it.
Just relax.
Work at it. It's like
get yourself to calm down, relax, get all this stuff off your mind. Okay, just get it all off your mind. Quit a word if it's TMS or not. Quit a word if it's whatever. It might be something worse than what we're all thinking. Just get yourself relaxed. Start getting yourself calmed down. Start going out and doing something that'll make you happy or whatever. You've got to do this for yourself because just doing that, relaxing, getting yourself soothed, as we call it, that'll help you get by with much less pain than sitting there worrying, well, what if this ain't TMS, you know? So if you're sitting there worrying if it ain't TMS, then that's just going to keep the boiler boiling, you know?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's no more doctors to go to. I've been to probably 12 or 14.
Yeah, well, you got one more, and his name's Dr. Z, as we call him, and he's the best.
Yeah, so. Dr. Z is really good.
Yeah,
okay,
so,
but I mean, if he tells me to see another doctor, you know,
no,
there's
he
no.
Won't.
I don't see it. I don't think so.
No.
You think he'll tell me it's.
You had a tumor.
We can't
this has been going on for 10 years, and you're not losing weight and wasting away.
No.
I don't think so. I'm not a medical professional, of course. I cannot diagnose and treat and prescribe.
No, but
what
we
you
know
describe is so much like classic TMS.
Right.
But believe Dr. Z, don't believe me. But the power of the diagnosis that you will receive from him when he recognizes
uh-huh.
your condition will make it so much easier for you to cure yourself. I was
mm-hmm.
constantly reinforcing a structural diagnosis by going to physical therapy and
mm-hmm.
getting different messages from different doctors about torn rotator cuffs and knees and stuff. It just keeps it alive that way.
I know.
If you get one good diagnosis from a reputable TMS doctor like Dr. Zaffarides, it will do all the things. It will do so much for you. It'll be better than anything else you've received from all of these physical therapists. It'll do so much to undo the conditioning you've been doing to yourself from medical misdiagnoses.
Right.
Which is the way this stuff works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yes, the fear grew. I mean, I didn't have much of a problem when I went to the first doctor.
Yep.
So, you know what I'm saying?
That's
another
thing
you can do while you're waiting is you can make a post on the forum. Are you on the forum yet?
I tried to get on the chat thing the other day, and I couldn't figure it out.
Oh, but have you just, did you send me a message about that?
Yes, uh-huh.
Ah, and okay. Have you made any posts yet on the forum and just said, go to the support forum and said, hey, here's my story? Because it might
yeah.
feel good for you to write it all out there. Is your username Giselle?
Yes, that's
okay.
What I put as my username.
Yeah, that's great. You may want to go to the support forum and just write some of this stuff out. I think it might be good for you to kind of get it out a little bit and kind of get you started and kind of warmed up for your appointment. But right now,
okay.
We probably do need to wrap up. It's
okay.
10:30, so we're a bit over. But thank you so much for calling in. I hope,
yeah.
I hope it's,
well,
it's helped a little.
Thank you all for all your help and for having the wiki and everything. I mean, it's a... Anyway.
Yeah, just get in there and write your personal
story. We've been there,
too.
We know how important it is.
I know you do. I know why you're trying to help people because you've been through this. And I hope that I can, once I recover, that I can join you in helping other people, spreading the word and stuff.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do that. I'll make a post. See if I can figure out how to do it. That'll be the only other thing.
I bet you can. And if you have any difficulty, just send me an email for us at tmswiki.org, and I'll help you out.
Okay. Sure,
all
right.
We'll do it over the telephone.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bruce, if you want, we can, I can go ahead earlier next week and explain the anchor and the state management.
Yeah, that's pretty technical stuff.
I can explain it to where you can understand it.
I paraphrased it and I broke it up
yeah.
into different sections.
I like the way you've done it. It's pretty common sense once I can get it out and explain it to you, but it will take me about five, six minutes.
Doing it, doing that reinforcing work.
There's a whole
and so on.
It's totally different from reading it to doing it, you know, because when I first started studying it and I heard the way you do it and I read it, I went right over it just like everybody else does. I thought, man, this ain't going, you know, that's just positive thinking work or whatever, but once it happens to you and you actually do get the reconsolidation out of it to where it takes the negative, charge out of this memory that's been bothering you for years, then you're like, wow, you know, this really is good. So yeah, we can talk about that next week if that's okay with y'all.
Yeah,
sounds good to me.
Cause it's 10:35 now.
Yep, so that sounds good.
Okay,
all right.
I'll end it now. I just want everybody to know that next week we will go into this swish again that keeps being, it's pretty much, it is the centerpiece in a way to the book. So I do want to get that out and let everybody know how to do it. I'm glad that Bruce is bringing it up because it was very, very instrumental in helping me get better. And if somebody else can pick up and it can help them, then it's all worth it.
It almost sounds like you have to have a practitioner while you do this yourself, someone to give you feedback and corrections while you're going through the process until you get it dialed, until you get it memorized.
Well, the seven steps, once you do the seven steps there that's in the book, that's it. You know, I mean, you can go and learn the condition or the anchor, which is pretty powerful, and it's got a whole other process for it. And I'll explain all that next week, so it won't.
Okay.
So you won't have to have somebody teaching you, you know, for $3,000 a class. You know, that's pretty much.
There's a side like
I like saving $3,000.
I like that.
Yeah, if you want to save a few thousand dollars, I'll just explain it all and get it out, and it'll be real good for next week's show.
Sounds good.
Well, that's good. We got to talk about a lot of stuff. We got to hear about Walt's love life and the one that got away and a few other things like that. And we got to hear a great story here tonight. And we appreciate the story and Forrest and Bruce and everybody that's showed up, Paula. So with that being said, that'd be the end of the show. Thank you.